Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside. Episode 8, The Long Hand of Lu. Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. We'd absolutely love to hear from you, so let's get those all-important contact details dealt with straight away. You can email us by sending an email to Gary or Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com, or you can record some voice feedback for us by using the Evoca recorder on our website. You can also talk to us in the forums or on Twitter. All of these details are on the Contact Us page on our website, which you can find at CelticMythPodShow.com. But first, some news and views.
Since the last episode, there's been some absolutely amazing news from Wessex Archaeology. Now, they got some funding from English Heritage to produce a series of educational aids, teacher's kit for pupils.
Excellent.
Now, I don't know, can you remember off the top of your head how many sites are involved in the Avebury series?
It's a while since I've been there. Let me think. There's the stones. The stone circle.
And for those of you who haven't been to Avebury, Avebury is a whole village inside a circle. The circle is absolutely huge. They've got two internal circles.
Yes, that's
right. Set in gorgeous countryside. It is the most amazing place to visit.
And there's an absolutely super pub, which is right in the middle of all the circles. And you can actually stay there. Really, really very nice.
No, I haven't done that.
A wonderful, absolutely wonderful place. Highly recommended.
Yeah, cool.
Anyway,
so there's the circle.
Yes, and there's the pub. No, I'm joking.
I don't think the pub is an English Heritage Monument.
There are the avenues. I think they found four. I think.
Sure.
And then there's also what they think is a ceremonial avenue going up to the sanctuary. So the sanctuary is another one. There's Silbury Hill.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Windmill Hill is actually a part of the same complex. I think it's actually earlier than Avebury.
Yes, comes under the same package that the educational pack is covering, though.
Ah, right. Okay, yes.
And I think there's one you missed, but I can't remember what it is off the top of my head.
West Kennet Longbarrow,
that's
probably.
That's the one, the Longbarrow. Now, I've been there as well, and that's an absolutely enormous, I don't know, it must be 150 yards long.
It is actually very, very big, isn't it?
It's huge, yeah.
Windmill Hill, I have to say, I'd like to see that, because I'd like to see the educational pack, because I actually visited there.
Yeah.
And it's a couple of mounds in the ground with quite a lot of sheep. There wasn't anything to give us any information on what Windmill Hill was about while we were there. So,
right, as I understand it, they found evidence of the Beaker people, the pots and things like that, the Neolithic stuff as well. Now, whether they were Neolithic sheep or not, I can't tell.
They didn't look that old, I have to say.
They didn't.
No.
Right. The wonderful thing, though, in all seriousness, is that you get like a teacher's sheet telling you about the place. You get a teacher's sheet. What did I say?
A t-shirt sheet.
Oh, did I? a teacher's sheet, which tells you about the place. You get activities for the kids to do, and you get one of these for each of the sites involved in the Avebury complex.
Excellent.
So it's really superb, and good on them for doing it. I'd like to see some more.
I'd like one ourselves, actually. That'd be really nice to have, actually.
Not a bad thing, is it?
No, maybe we'll write to them and ask them if they'll be nice and let us have one.
That'd be excellent. You can download these packs, along with some royalty-free photographs.
Cool. We'll have to do
that,
then.
So there's a link to the site where you can get these things from in our show notes.
Excellent.
Something else has happened since the last episode.
Yes.
Do you remember we spoke to Greg Lemon of The Myth Show?
Yes, I do.
He is. He's a great man, isn't he?
Yeah, we did an interview with Greg Lemon speaking about Celtic myth. And he was absolutely super. We had a really fun time.
Yeah.
And I think his show came out this week with that interview, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Yeah. We were a bit nervous. It's the first interview we've done. And Greg did a great job. He put us at our ease and we were able to chat away. He got us talking about all sorts of things, didn't he? So if you want to listen to us making complete fools of ourselves, go and have a listen. It's great fun.
Yeah, it was lots of fun. Thanks so much, Greg, for that. It was a really fun interview. Another thing that's happened this week is it was St. Ivo's Day. So happy St. Ivo's Day to everybody from Brittany. St. Ivo's Day was on the 19th of May, and you can find out more about St. Ivo on our website.
So is he the patron saint of Brittany?
He is the patron saint of Brittany.
Ah.
Yes.
So we'd like to wish every Breton Celt out there a happy St. Ivo's Day.
In retrospect, we would. So with news and views out the way, can you remind us what's happened to the Sons of Tuirann?
Sure. The three Sons of Tuirann killed the father of Lulamvada and buried him in a nameless grave. The Fae lead Lu to the grave, and he discovers what had happened. He travels back to Tvir and demands a fine from his killers. Breon, Ur and Urka set out to recover the greatest magical treasures in the world and make friends with King Isal. Together, they sail for the cold coastline of Yorwe. The ship ploughed through fields of great ice. White rocks that glided over the waves past the prow of the tall ship belonging to Isal, king. Freezing cold, steaming sculptures of sharp alien shapes that grinded ominously along the sides of the ship. The Sons of Tuirann clasped warm furs around themselves as their breath made icy crystals in their beards. And then the delightful, wonderful coast of Yorwe slowly took shape through the haze of the sea, its many inlets crowned with silent white-capped peaks. The people and the armies were watching the harbours and the landing places before them, and they knew them at once and shouted at them. And then Isal went on shore peaceably, and he went to where his son-in-law, the king, was, and told him the story of the Sons of Tuirann from beginning to end. What has brought them to this country?
To ask what a hound you have.
It was a bad thought you had coming with them to ask it, for the gods have not given that much luck to any three champions in the world, that they would get my hound by force or by goodwill.
It would be better for you to let them have the hound, since they have put down so many of the kings of the world.
But all he could say was only idleness to the king. So he went then to where the Sons of Tuirann were and gave them the whole account. And when they heard the king's answer, they made no delay, but put quick hands on their arms and offered to give battle to the army of Yorwe. And when they went, there was a brave battle fought on both sides. And as for the Sons of Tuirann, they began to kill and to strike at the men of Yorwe till they parted from one another in the fight, so that Ur and Urkar chanced to be on one side, and Breon by himself on the other side. It was a gap of danger and a breaking of ranks that was before Breon in every path he took, till he came to the king of Yorwe in the midst of the battle where he was. And then the two brave champions began a fierce fight together, and they did not spare one another in it. And at the last, Breon overcame the king and bound him and brought him through the middle of the army till he came to the place where Isol was. And he said,
"There's your son-in-law for you. I swear by my hand of valor, I'd think it easier to kill him three times than to bring him to you once like this."
So then the whelp was given to the Sons of Tuirann, and the king was unbound, and peace was made between them. When they brought all this to an end, they bade farewell to Isal and to all the rest. Now, as tries to lure the Long Hand. It was showed to him that the sons of Tuiran had got all the things that he wanted for the battle with the Fomor, and on that he sent a spell after them to put forgetfulness on them of the rest of the fine that they had not got. He stooped to lay the spell on the sea, and it became a wave and travelled unbroken till it reached the boat of Mananan. It rocked the boat softly, and the three sons of Tuiran remembered their father's house. But they had no sorrow for the wrong done to the earth, and forgetfulness of Myochain's hill came upon them. And he put a great desire and longing on them to go back to Erin. So they forgot that a part of the fine was wanting to them, and they turned back again towards home.
A good welcome we would have now if we were in our father's house, and good would it be in the morning to slip our hounds for the chase.
And good would it be in the evening to hear the sounds of harps in our father's house. Let us go back to Erin.
Go back to Erin!
The ocean sweeper leapt through the sea foam towards the sacred land. And it is the place where Lu was at the time, at a gathering of the people for a fair on the green outside Tavir, and the king of Erin along with him. And it was made known to Lu that the sons of Tuiran were landed at Brún na Boyn. And he went into the city of Tavir and shut the gate after him. And he put on Manannan's smooth armour, and the cloak of the daughters of Phlydius, and he took his own arms in his hand. And the sons of Tuiran came where the king was, and they were made welcome by him and by the Tuatha De Danann.
Welcome home, sons of Tuiran. Did you get the blood fine?
Greetings, Nuada King. We did get it. Where is Lu for us to give it to him?
He was here a while ago. People of Tavir search for him.
They cannot find him. I know the place where he is, for it has been made known to him that we are come to Erin, and these deadly arms with us, and he has gone into Tavir to avoid us.
Messengers were sent to him then, and it is the answer he gave them that he would not come, but that the fine should be given to the king. So the sons of Tuiran did that, and when the king had taken the fine, they all went to the palace in Tavir. And Lu came out on the lawn, and the fine was given to him. And this is what he said. There is good payment here for anyone that ever was killed, or that ever will be killed. But there is something wanting to it yet that is not lawful to leave out. Where is the cooking spit, the flame under the sea? Where are the three shouts on the hill that you did not give yet?
Give the ocean sweeper again, Olu, and the sons of Tuiran will pay the fine in full.
I cannot, for I lent the boat at first that the battle loss of Kian might be made good in readiness for the oncoming great battle. That loss is made good. You are here now because my spell has brought you. I laid a spell of forgetfulness upon the sea, and if you'd remembered the wrong that you did the earth, you would have remembered the shouts on Myochin's hill, and easily would you have given them, since you had the spear of victory, the skin of healing, and the apples of life. Now you must fare forth without these treasures, and without the boat of Manana, and whatsoever you win, you will win solely by the strength that is in yourselves.
As well named you are, Lu the Long-Handed, your vengeful fingers have reached across the sea to grasp us, and they will not lose their hold till you have dragged us under the grave mound.
With that, the sons of Tuiran came under clouds of weakness. They left the place then and went to their father's house that night, and they told him all that they had done, and the way Lu had dealt with them. There was grief and darkness on Tuiran then, and they spent the night in grief. And on the morrow they went to their ship, and Enya, their sister, with them, and she was crying and lamenting in a song of sorrow.
It is the mighty sorrow, Brian, of my life. It is not to Tavir you are going. After all the troubles you've had before this, even though I would wish to follow you. O salmon of the Dunboyne, O salmon of the River Leaf, since I cannot keep you here, I'm loath to part from you. O rider of the Waif of Twain, the man that stands best in a fight, if you come back again, I think it will not be pleasing to your enemy. Is there sorrow in you for the sons of Tuiran leaning now on their green shields? Their going is a cause for sorrow. My mind is overflowing with it. You to be tonight at Benadir till the heavy coming of the morning. You who've taken forfeits from brave men. It is you that has increased our grief. It is a great sorrow your journey is from Tavir, and from the pleasant plains and the great Wisnik of Mir. There is nothing so sorrowful as this.
After that complaint, they went searching for the island of Caer, the land that is under the sea wave, the land of the fair-haired women, out on the rough waves of the green sea, and they were a quarter of a year on the sea without getting any news of the land. They heard tidings of it in many places, but no one knew where it could be found. Wise druids told them that the island was protected by the magic of Fund, the sea queen, the daughter of Flinius, and no one who went there ever returned. The sun had risen and set many times on the search. Breon, Urkar, and Ur were weary. The wind had failed them, and they were labouring at the oars. It seemed to them they would never find the island of Caer.
Let us rest a little, for my strength is spent.
They rested from the oars, and Breon cast a line over the side of the boat. He drew up a fish, white as silver and covered with crimson spots.
Brother, your fish is purple-spotted like the salmon that swims in Connla's well, and eats the crimson nuts of the hazel of knowledge. Let him go free, for sake of his beauty.
Aye, that I will. The sea have granted me knowledge as a reward. I know that the island of Caer is beneath us.
He jumped into the water, and the fay of the water made him to breathe, and he swam down till he reached the land that is under the sea. It was a goodly land, and Breon walked through its starry meadows till he came to the palace of the guarded flame. He entered it, and found many beautiful maidens singing and broidering golden flowers on mantles for the daughter of Flidius. In the midst of them leapt and shone the guarded flame. Breon spoke no word when he entered, and the maidens did not lift their eyes to look at him. He took the flame in his two hands and turned to leave the palace. The maidens burst out laughing.
You are a brave man, for even if your brothers were along with you, the least of the 3 times 50 women of us would not let the flame go with you or with them. But for all that, and since the flame does not burn you, you are daring and worthy enough to keep it. We have a flame for every day in the year, and you are the bravest champion and handsomest that ever came to look at us broidering cloaks for the sea queen.
Oh, maidens, may every day in the air bring you fresh laughter and delight. And if good wishes can reach you from the country above the sea floor, you will have mine every day I live. And farewell now, and my 1,000 blessings with you.
He rose through the water till he came to where his brothers were. His brothers thought it was too long he was away from them, and just as they were going to leave the place they were, they saw him coming towards them, and that raised their courage greatly. He climbed into the boat, and as the flame came above the water, it changed into a cooking spit, and Breon laid it carefully in the boat. And he climbed into the boat, and they went on to look for the hill of Miochin. When they came there, they saw that the hill was very high and green. It rose almost straight out of the sea. Only on one side could it be climbed. Miochin, that was the guardian of the hill, came towards them, and when Breon saw him, he attacked him, and the fight of those two champions was like the fight of two lions, till Miochin fell at the last. And after Miochin had fallen, his 3 sons came out to fight with the 3 sons of Tuiran, and if anyone ever came from the east of the world to look at any fight, it is to see the fight of these champions he had a right to come, for the greatness of their blows and the courage of their minds. The names of the sons of Miochin were Gorc and Conn and Eil, and they drove their 3 spears through the bodies of the sons of Tuiran. But that did not discourage them at all, and they put their own 3 spears through the bodies of the sons of Miochin, so that they fell into the clouds and the faintness of death.
What were you now, my dear brothers?
We are near our death.
Let us rise up and give three shouts upon the hill, for I see the signs of death coming on us.
We are not able to do that.
So Brienne rose up and raised each of them with one hand, and be shedding blood heavily all the time, until they gave the three shouts.
The debt is paid, Olo!
We can rest now, my brothers.
We are done. Tis over.
When they'd given the shouts, weakness came on them, and they fell down and could not rise. After that, Brienne brought them with him to the boat. They took the fastenings from it. They hoisted slowly the crimson sails, and the wind strengthened itself and filled the sails, and kept the boat before it till the hills of Erin showed themselves like pale clouds, and they were travelling the sea for a long time. But at last Brienne said,
I see Benidare and our father's done, and Tavir at the king's.
We would have our fill of health if we could see that. Raise up our heads on your breast till we see Erin again, and life or death will be the same to us after that. O Brienne, flame of valour without treachery, we would sooner death bring ourselves away than to see you with wounds upon your body, and with no physician to heal you.
Then they came to Benidare, and from that they went on to their father's house. The three were laid on the green grass, and Enya their sister tended them, and the leeches and healers of their clan ministered unto them. Tuiran, their father, sat on the earth beside them. He was putting together in his mind words to say to Lu. Brienne said to Tuiran,
Go, dear father, to Tavir, and give this bit to Lu, and bring the skin that is healing in it for our relief. Ask it from him for the sake of friendship, fear of the one blood, and let him not give hardness for hardness. And, dear father, do not be long in your journey, or you will not find us alive before you.
And then Tuiran went to Tavir, and he found Lua the Longhand before him, and he gave him the spit, and he told him the three shouts had been given. He asked the skin of him to heal his children, and Lu said he would not give it. So Tuiran went back to them and told them that he had not got the skin. Brienne asked his father to take him to see Lu, so that he could ask him himself for the skin. So they went to Lu. Brienne asked the skin of him, and Lu said he would not give it, and that if they would give him the breadth of the earth in gold for it, he would not take it from them, unless he was sure their death would come on them in satisfaction for the deed that they had done. And when Brienne heard that, he went back to the place his two brothers were, and he lay down between them, and his life went out from him, and out from the other two at the same time. And their father cried and lamented over his three beautiful sons, that had the making of a king of Erin in each of them, and his strength left him, and he died. And they were buried together in the one grave. In the next episode, the Fomori descend in force upon the men of Erin, and Lu gathers his forces for battle. And now for some listener feedback. Before we move on to feedback, there's a couple of short promos for other podcasts that you may be interested in.
This single malt is exceptional.
Thank you, Wraith.
How did you find this?
Well, as I can't get around like you do, I have to rely on sources.
Do you speak of those rascal scallywags and ne'er-do-wells at the Scotch Cast?
Yeah. Chip, Michael, and Jeff can teach old sea dogs like you new things about Scotch, and coach the curious on what makes a Scotch a single malt, cask strength, or portwood. 'Twill be a time before I invite them back to the Defiant.
Why's that?
Why do you think I'm drinking your Scotch? Those rogues drank all of mine. The Scotch Cast, for good company, good spirits, and good resources concerning the single malt. www.thescotchcast.com.
The President of the United States is dead. He was murdered in the morning sunlight by a four-year-old boy. So began J.C. Hutchins' Seventh Son Patio Book Trilogy, the most popular podcast novel series in history. Last December, the trilogy concluded. The heroes were triumphant, or so we think. But now, it's time to go back and reveal moments in the Seventh Son story that were merely hinted at in the original trilogy. Welcome to Seventh Son Obsidian. J.C. Hutchins has opened up his Seventh Son universe and invited the seven biggest names in podcast fiction to chronicle a nationwide blackout that rocked America during the Seventh Son trilogy. Seventh Son Obsidian features short stories from these award-winning and nominated authors: Michael A. Stackpole, Scott Sigler, T. Morris, Mer Lafferty, Matt Wallace, Mark Yoshimoto Nemkov, and Christiana Ellis. And even more tales from these trailblazing podcast entertainers: Evo Terra, Dan Klass, Wichita Rutherford, George Probb, TD0013, Soccer Girl, and the cast of the Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd. Obsidian also features dozens of audio and video recordings, stories of the blackout as told by its victims, created by Seventh Son fans across the globe. On May 31st, the lights go out. America becomes a police state. Because when the power fails, chaos reigns. Subscribe now to Seventh Son Obsidian or catch up with the original Seventh Son trilogy experience at jchutchins.net.
Thank you for those. I hope you enjoyed them. We've had some great feedback by email and on the forums on our website about the use of accents in our shows. It seems that opinions are divided at the moment.
So we thought, as this episode wraps up the Sons of Twiran story, that in our next episode we'd try to restrict the accents and allow you to decide whether you'd like the show better with or without accents.
Yeah, definitely. We're also going to concentrate on trying to bring more emotional drama into the dialogue. So please keep your feedback coming in this matter, and in fact on any issue, as it's important to us and your voice really does matter.
Absolutely. So until next time, may the wind be at your back and may the road always rise to meet your feet. Until then...
Ta-ra, folks.
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com. We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us a quick email or voice feedback by emailing either Gary, that's G-A-R-Y, or Ruth, R-U-T-H, at CelticMythPodShow.com. You can chat to us in the forums on our website. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Kulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You heard Haghole at the beginning and are listening to The Skylark now. You can find out more about this foot-stomping band at www.sfhounds.com. And thanks again to Diane Arkinstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used for some of the incidental music in this podcast. You'll find links to their websites in our show notes.